With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, we're back with another episode of Let Women Peek.
Yeah, Let Women Peek.
So we've got a new exciting person today who's kind of all in the academia world.
She's all over academics.
So it's a whole interesting story of kind of like...
Yeah.
What the fuck happened in academia.
A lot of big words. A long words.
And how it basically, this shit show dribbled down...
The leg of...
Into Willoughby.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to think about anything dribbling down into Willoughby. But yeah, this week in the turfing world,
yes,
we've had some interesting stuff. What have we had? Oh, the Scottish Library that didn't stock the women who wished.
Oh yeah, there was that. They wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
So like, a bit more censorship.
Yeah. Hey-ho, and they put on, someone did an FOI and it was like, they had on the website, where's the book? And the Scottish, the National Library were like, oh,
what it's book?
It's in a stock room that's on the Outer Hebrides, and it won't be here. The carrier pigeons won't bring it down until next
but
year.
But if you'd like to go to the... That's a terrible accent.
Oh, that was awful.
It was really bad. If you'd like to go to the Hebrides, you might be able to
one
have a little
copy.
Look at it.
Yeah. But then when they asked, they were like, oh, sorry about that. No, actually, it'll be here next week. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. So that was a fuck up. Fuck you, Scotland. Do you know what? My family were all Scottish, right? And
God.
I actually identify as Scottish, as you can tell.
You
by
identify
my accent.
As Scottish. Yeah.
But fuck you, Scotland.
They've
the SNP. Fuck off. Anyway, and then what else have we had on this week?
We had Mr. Willoughby.
Mr. Willoughby.
And his poll.
His massive failure of a poll. Yeah.
Another poll that didn't
meet the mark. It didn't come up to muster.
God
so
bless
him. So he put out a poll on Twitter saying, who would you rather... How does he... Oh, that's my Jimmy Savile voice. Who does he sound like?
Well, that's about right, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh. It's a joke. Right. Who would you rather... That's my India Willoughby voice now I'm doing it. Right. Who would you rather date? Me, India Willoughby, or J.K. Rowling?
And he thought he would win.
He thought he'd done something. What a fucking idiot.
Win.
On Twitter. Come
like,
on.
What another?
That's a blue sky post, not a fucking Twitter post. We had that. And then we had a very good Australian... commission thingy.
Yes, I didn't see this, but you were telling me.
It was really good. So this guy was going to this lady like, right, what's your job title? And she went, I'm the Minister for Women. And he said, what is a woman? And she said, it's the thing that I'm a minister for. And he was like, yeah, but what is a woman? And she was like, well, you know, it's a woman. It's if your community really thinks you're a woman, you're a woman. And this went on and on and on until my cringe gland
exploded.
Yeah, it fell out of my eyes and I couldn't watch anymore. And what else has been going on?
I did a bit of pub turfing. Did you hear about that?
No, tell me about pub turfing. Go on.
It was all good. Like, so it was already like, you know, they weren't tras. They were like, I said, oh, I got cancelled, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh my God, this is all fucking ridiculous. And then we got into the conversation. She said, as it went on, But I do think that some people are born in the wrong body.
Who said that?
This person I was chatting
with. Okay,
yeah. Like, there is a small proportion of people that are born in the wrong body.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like... Yeah. And then I remember the bit of the conversation where I said, well, imagine that you think you're born in the wrong body as a man and you're attracted to men, but you think you're born in the wrong body and you want to be a woman. And this person sort of went... What does that then make you? Like, if you think you're a woman and he said, oh yeah, straight. And I went, Yeah. And he went, oh God, I'd never thought about
that. The homophobia. Well, I had a good interaction with a TRA on Twitter.
Oh, did you?
And do you know what? To be fair, I know we take the piss a lot, but it actually did make me see things in a like a properly different light.
In what way?
First of all, they were dressed as a lizard, so that really thought, this is a person in his
60s. So they identify as a lizard?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I said, I don't think that men should be in women's spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And they said... they dropped a bombshell, actually. You know when you hear something, you're like, that's actually blowing my head off. They said... you've got a gender-neutral toilet in your house.
Oh, wow, yeah, that would have really blown your mind, wouldn't it?
Huh.
My God, what a good point. Oh, my God, that was
so
killer,
I don't think I'm a TERF anymore. That's made me rethink absolutely everything.
Totally, yeah.
Anyway, enough. That's 5 minutes, 23 seconds.
Okay, so we'll shut up now.
We've got Udi Patuti. We've got a fabulous Twitter guest whose name we don't know. She's called something long and complicated, but she's a very clever lady. She told us all about gender in academia.
Absolutely, yeah. And the whole kind of crazy ass journey of being like a proper academic.
Yeah.
And trying very, very hard to believe it. She tried so hard.
She tried, God bless her.
She really
trying
did.
To cultivate your own cognitive dissonance is quite a weird thing.
Quite exhausting.
Thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Until finally.
The dam broke. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this. It's about 1:10. Stick with it. It's funny. And we'll see you at the end for a little outro. So you were going to tell us about the greatest day of your life.
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
So a few days ago, I actually retweeted a post I had put out actually a couple of years ago where I said... one day I woke up and everybody was saying that everything else was transphobic, and it was like that Mitchell and Webb look sketch with Vectron.
Yeah, explain it.
In this particular sketch, it's basically really futuristic. Everybody and people are talking about, a group of guys are talking about, we're going to push forward by Vectron's eyebrows, and it's, you know, by the glory of Vectron, we are going to do this. And it's really impassioned. It's clearly sort of like quasi-religious.
Yeah.
So, and then one guy is really like awkward and he waits for everybody else to go, and he goes over to the one other guy who's left and he goes, who's Vectron? I don't know what's happened. I took one day off. I came back.
Oh my God.
And everybody is saying Vectron, 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 Vectron. And I...
Hilarious.
There is an element of that of just a couple of years ago, as well as sort of like, okay, we need to sound professional. We need to sound, you know, correct and check our things. And obviously, let's not be exclusionary and use... outdated language. All of a sudden this new thing, transphobic.
Came from nowhere. I always said that. It was like I had one day off, or I've missed the memo.
You
went on holiday, and when you came back, everyone's just like, oh no, men can be women now.
See,
and you're like, what?
Yeah. And do you know why? I've got to thank one particular other Twitter user or X user, the Twix users, for doing it. It's because there's a philosopher on X who's started to make his voice really heard. His name's Daniel Codsey. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
How do you spell it?
Codsi.
Oh, right, okay.
And basically I'd liked and retweeted one of his things. He wrote a really good thread, and then not long after that he liked and then retweeted this thing that I had just put out about the Vectron thing.
Okay.
And then after that yeah, it went a little bit, not viral, but enough people saw it.
And semi-viral. So are you relating to that? Do you feel like Kathleen Stock and that, I mean, she was really left, her cheese was left out in the wind. I don't know what that means, but I heard it on Ferris Bueller's Day.
I've not said who I am.
Oh, yeah. But you're, as a philosophy, we will get there. You know, all these philosophers now going, do you know what? This is out of order, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, are you like, oh, fuck you, Daniel Codsey. Where were you 10 years ago? Or you're like, no, come on.
No.
Let's go, Codsey.
I'm happy with anyone, because I can't say anything because I'm still anonymous.
That's right.
I'm an anonymous. The reason why there's a lot, I don't think, if you are part of the university or if you're part of higher education or heritage, I come from these two sectors. And these two sectors are basically, I would say, the most, amongst the most captured completely. Yeah, and they were sort of the earliest captured as well.
Yeah.
It has been so difficult to even, you know, the language policing has been absolutely out the door. Like, one of the events, I know we're going to talk about my NPKening, but there was an event in the NPKening, which was the Rebecca Tuval incident. Do you know about that?
Oh,
in philosophy.
Yeah.
Do you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. Okay. So this was around about like 2018. Don't quote me on that, though. And she wrote this article. It was around about the time of the Rachel Dolezal thing.
Oh,
about,
yes. Okay.
And so she was a philosopher. She wrote an article for a philosophy magazine or journal called Hypatia, which was all about particularly feminist interpretations of philosophy and the like.
Right,
and
okay.
In that article, and I remember this was like, I've had sort of like such a gradation of peaking, and this was one of the sort of like the watermarks. She wrote an article where she was actually saying very much in favour of the fact that you could identify into a category that you were not born into. So she was saying Bruce Jenner can absolutely become Caitlyn Jenner. And she was comparing this to the Rachel Dolezal case. And she was saying this should be allowed. If Bruce Jenner can become Caitlyn Jenner...
Okay, yeah, so she agreed that Rachel Dolezal...
If you can change sex, you can change race.
And she was extremely... She was very... I would have said, and I imagine that she still is, that she's very much, you know, trans women are women, if they say. That was her point. Mm. She got absolutely
mullered
by the Academy, by people who read it, for being transphobic.
Yeah.
Because she used Bruce Jenner's dead name. She was comparing it to Rachel Dolezal, and for some reason...
Oh, my God. I was just assuming she would have got mullered for saying, no, of course you can't change race, do you know what I mean?
No,
but she actually got called transphobic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that even you could be as polite as you can, you could actually be in favour of it, but if you did not use
the right language,
it's complete capitulation.
It's sanctioned language.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why it's evidence of why it's such a weak movement or great argument, because it's such an absurd preposition. It needs that complete capitulation.
Yeah,
you can't question it, or it just
because
crumbles.
If you point out one, you know, detail, or you don't use adequate, it lets in just enough light that it will make a it will give weight to anybody else who's even
one question.
Yes.
So who are you?
So
who are you?
Yeah, who are you? What are you doing here?
Oh my god!
Where did you rock up from?
My Twitter name Twix name is Dr. Udamia Potu.
Yeah, bless you.
Thank you.
What's an Udamia and what's a Potu?
Udamia is the Greek word for nothing.
Right, yeah.
A couple of years ago, I got quite fed up of how anxious I was about talking and asking questions about, you know, not just gender, but among, you know, a range of different topics. And gender was a particularly
in your
one.
Work, you mean?
In my work and in my professional circles. Yeah. And there was yet another firestorm going on, and it was Mary Beard had been accused of following some TERFs and
oh my God.
Some very unimaginative and unlikable ancient historians. And there was another one about, which was about medievalism as well, which is a different, was a different thing, but yeah. But it was the Mary Beard one. And I basically set up an anonymous Twitter account. One, to actually observe and debate, because I wanted to do, like we've just described with the Rebecca Tuval thing, you couldn't.
Yeah, honestly.
I wanted to have some a space to actually do some inquiry and to discuss and to find out what I actually thought and argue. Sometimes if I don't know where I am, just sort of like starting to argue helps me centre what I actually think.
Yeah.
So that's what the eudaimia is. It's Greek for nothing. And I liked the joke of being, it's a nothing that is female. And the patu, I've got a bit of an amateur interest in zoology and ecology. And a patu is one of the weirdest looking animals on Earth.
We saw a picture of this, didn't we?
Oh, the picture.
So we will put a picture on, because you will go, no fucking way.
That's a Jim Henson.
Not real.
I cannot believe that those... Yeah. But it is real. And those aren't actual eyeballs. They are actual eyeballs.
Yeah, those big yellow... We'll have a link on the show notes, but they are unreal. Yeah. So a nothing mad-looking bird...
Yeah, they've got the largest...
Very female-coded.
Nothing bird.
Weird staring eyes. They've got the largest mouth-to-body ratio of any vertebrates.
Bigger than India Willoughby.
I know. He's got quite a small mouth, I think.
Oh, yeah. Quite metaphorically.
Yeah.
So that's your name. Oh, so you were saying about the Mitchell and Webb. So you retweeted your own tweet.
From a few years ago. I was basically in the back of a long car journey. And you know when you're just thinking on Twitter, bored. And I was thinking, I remember saying that. And I just decided.
It still stands.
Let's go and find my old tweet. I was thinking, yeah, I'm just going to retweet that because it's still true.
It's still as true as it was then.
Even more so.
Yeah.
And then Daniel retweeted it, and then lots of people saw it, including one Helen Joyce.
Yay! Who's that?
Helen...
I never heard of him. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So yeah. How long did you scream for?
I was in the back of a moving car, and I was sort of like, oh Lord. And so I was next to my child, and I sort of like, oh Lord. And I sort of like tapped my husband, who was in the passenger seat, he wasn't driving, and I was sort of like, look at what's just done, because of course my husband knows all about
it. No, does he?
Because of course I keep talking about it.
Yes. Yeah, amazing. Yes. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, you turn to your child and you're like, look, mummy's famous.
Yeah, no, it was good. Maya Forstater too.
Amazing.
But amazing. I don't know if Kathleen Stock, I'd be really excited if it was Kathleen Stock, because Kathleen Stock was another one of the watermarks that made me go,
we talk about this all the time, but like when I first started turfing out, how you would look to these amazing minds, these strong women who had these rigorous intellectual arguments and could answer any questions, and then you look at their side and be like, oh, it's Colin Montgomery. Yeah. This is how we pick a side.
This is India Willoughby.
Colin Montgomery, Katie Montgomery is what he likes to be called. Like, when I was sort of like borderline on this, because I've had a bit of a long, I had a long empeakening, because I was very much, my personal life and my professional life was very much assumed of, you're going to be on the trans women or women. And I first opened my Twitter account, I was trying to argue that, because I was trying to say, okay, I don't understand this, so I'm going to start arguing for it.
That's an interesting way of doing it.
See if I can actually indoctrinate myself.
Yeah.
Basically, like, I've been a member of a fair few debating societies, and that's often how it works.
Because
you don't decide which side you're on.
Yes.
You're told, sort of, like, pick a side, and then it's argue your job, regardless of what your personal thoughts are. And sometimes you do come around and you're like, okay, I can see, even though I wasn't on it.
And the value of seeing the other person's point of view.
Yeah, it does help.
And then it helps to rebut them. Like, this is another thing. Like, I think TERFs are very good at trying to see things from the other point. Like, how have so many people that I respect, how have you swallow this bullshit. Yeah. Yeah. You try on their arguments for size and think, well, how can anyone believe this? Like, if you talk to the average TRA, they've got no understanding of, like, the turf arguments. They all think they're barbecue babies that... And we probably agree on a lot of things.
I know, there's definitely points where...
Of course, they won't admit it. Yeah.
Like, for a long time, one of the reasons why I kind of wedged myself into the sort of like TRA side for a little bit was because I was in a relationship that was clearly on its way out, and my former partner was actually horrible, would say horrible things
like genuinely
about,
transphobic, genuinely,
like genuinely. I don't even want to say, that is such a pared down word at this point.
I know,
but he would example. We would be watching something, and it would be Orange is the New Black, and they had a trans character, and he would say things like "kill it with fire" and stuff like that. And you know, when you're like, don't like it, and I would obviously get into horrible arguments with him, saying, "Stop saying that really dark."
Yeah,
shit,
horrid.
Basically. And he would keep saying that, and that actually ended up wedging me more in. And this is one of we have everything to thank about for every turf who speaks truth to power. But I do sometimes think when people get really horrible, I'm like, okay, I used to be sort of on my way to becoming a turf, or not even a turf, I don't really call myself a turf, but becoming gender critical, and the thing that kept pulling me back is that I felt that I had to defend.
Yes. Well, it's basic sort of human decency, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's like the whole thing of like the trans mantra of like trans rights are human rights. And when I first came across it, after I obviously woke up from this 10-year sleep, and I'd think, well, I was like, that's a really weird, because everybody's rights are human rights.
By definition.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, of course they're human rights. Like, mine are human rights. Everybody's rights are human rights because we're humans. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's a tautological argument.
It's tautological.
Or teleological sort of argument.
Well, that's their calling card, isn't it?
Yeah.
The circular definitions
So
what are you going to say about Colin Montgomery?
Thank you. I actually thought that he wrote fairly persuasively. He's a good writer.
He's one of their best.
He's one of their best writer. The thing is,
the bar
is
low.
But like, I remember reading him and sort of like in that sort of, like I say, very gradual growth from, I'd say sort of like from me being very aware of this as a thing was about 2008 when I encountered it when I was an undergrad. And then I kind of started to sort of like really embrace gender critical thought around about 2019. So that was
a long old time.
I was quite involved in feminist spaces, and obviously I come from the higher education sector, so and I do a humanities subject, so my professional life eventually became really embroiled in this. But it took a long time, and Colin Montgomery's stuff, Katie Montgomery's stuff was, I would read it and I could say, I can see there is reason here. It's very well written, it's thoughtful. But if I could just go, like, talk a little bit about the Kathleen Stock article, which if Kathleen is listening to this...
She is.
Please send me it, because it was such a simple art... because I'd been reading a lot, because like I say, from about 2012 onwards I became really interested in feminism. I was very liberal feminist online. I was in my early 20s, and I was reading the likes of Jezebel and BuzzFeed.
Oh my god, yeah, the Hairpin, the Mary Jane.
And I really liked Caitlin Moran. I was watching Orange is the New Black, and
same.
I was sort of like, so
Laverne Cox. Change your surname, for fuck's sake. Like, that's
really
determinism.
I was desperately trying to understand this, because I also had a lot of people in my friendship groups who did identify as this, or were starting to, were terms like, you know, gender fluid or non-binary wasn't quite alive at time, but they definitely became in this period.
So you're reading all this Jezebel.
Yeah, and I ended up reading a lot of actual theory, like Judith Butler theory, to try and understand it.
God love you.
I know. Wow. Like, I because of my specialism, because I come from the humanities, I'm actually an ancient historian. I had to be familiar with the frameworks, what they call theoretical frameworks, anyway. And so I kind of came across Judith Butler anyway, but through that. But I've been trying to understand it in relation to gender, to try and understand this idea of language creates reality, which it does to an extent.
Yeah.
And how that somehow means that I am to ignore what I see. Which I've got to say I found so difficult. I always found it difficult to understand why somebody else had to sort of like micromanage my language about what when I was talking about them, even when they weren't there.
Yeah, and literally, it's your thoughts as well. But
it's very unhealthy. But Kathleen Stock's article was everything. It was like, it was the... I talk about it so much because it was so simply written. It was so not sensationalist. It wasn't angry. It wasn't outraged. It was a very calm, very logical voice saying, okay, if we say Elton John is straight or Dave Chappelle is white, why does that not cause offence if we say Caitlyn Jenner if we say Caitlyn Jenner is a man? That does cause offence. It was like she also sort of like was just explaining things like the Vancouver rape crisis, which I didn't know. For those who don't know, the Vancouver rape crisis was sued by a trans-identified male who wanted to work as a counsellor there, and they said, no, you're a man, or you're male. And they got absolutely... Jenny Lindsay's word hounded is the best one.
Yeah, well, they were nailing dead rats to the door, weren't they?
That's the bit I remember. I didn't realise what I'd actually kicked it off, actually, but I remember the whole nailing rats to the door and stuff.
Crisis.
And they were graffiti on the walls, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, turfs, die turfs, and all the classics. Jeez. But these are women... I care so much about rape victims that I'm going to
terrifying.
Just like I say, sort of like the calmness of Stock's article to say this is not.
Do you remember what it was called or where it was published?
It was on Medium, which is why you can't get it now.
Why? What happened to Medium?
Medium, I think, was back in the bad old days of Twitter being very censorious towards anybody who was even remotely turfy.
Before Elon,
and I think it must have just got taken down or she deleted it or something. Okay. It's when you Google it's called When Bindles Speak. And it was discussing how Julie Bindle, love her, worship that woman's
She got in trouble. Don't fucking hell. Don't start that rumour. That's all we need. She's not. For she is, for legal purposes, in fact not a dude.
But she is, in the way that we understand it, she is a dude.
She's a dude.
We love her.
We love her.
We know her. Yeah. We love her. She's fantastic. She got in trouble because it was back in the day when she used to write for The Guardian, and she wrote an article where she said about the Vancouver Rape Crisis Centre, where she says, I don't care if you call yourself a woman, I don't care what bits you chop off, you're not a woman in relation to this. And you know when you're like, okay, it's colourful language. She's not wrong. It's especially when you talk about how, you know, absolutely callous the trans-identified male who was suing a rape crisis centre because it's that thing of sort of like why was it so important for you to work there, just sort of like this you know, very calm, rational explanation of the situation and then this wonderful like key in the lock logic moment of,
but it must have been really hard for you, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate, I certainly can, where you've got either that personal or professional pull and all of your friends, you know, they all think the things and you all think the things and The Guardian all thinks the things and weirdly everyone in your circle agrees on all the topics and no one ever changes their mind about anything and we all do the flags and we all do the parades and we all da, 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 da. And then when you have that, oh fucking hell, it's like you don't want to, what day of school did I miss when everyone's now got this the Vectron, you know, everyone, and what have I, and this is when we go away and we educate ourselves, because you've obviously read something or seen something or met someone or done something that I obviously haven't
done. I'm
just
not quite getting this
So that pull, and it's really fascinating to me, like, why some people are so amazing, us, that we go with that curiosity and see where it leads us, and ends up being raging fucking turfs. And other people just go, no,
I know.
Like, why are we so amazing?
I remember putting this out into like a group thing about this. It's like, why are we getting it?
What's going on with us that we're getting it
that other people aren't? Like, because it's not an easy path to tread, because you lose your job, you lose your friends. Do you know what I mean? It's not.
I personally haven't lost anything.
Okay, I've lost quite a bit.
Yeah, you have.
I'm still losing.
I have not. You never know what's around the corner. That's why I'm anonymous on this podcast. But I mean.
But we're risking it. We know we're risking it.
And I still know that I can't, like, there's certain people that I meet that I can't be like, oh, yes, I've started this podcast.
But yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, even if you're relatively untouched, you still have to be...
Clandestine. I love that word. Yeah.
So for you to be personally and professionally in it, it must have been a bit like, my deep, dark, dirty secret.
It's funny you're talking about this, because I've literally been talking to a publisher about a book I've also been getting involved in a conference with somebody who I really don't like, because in higher education, this individual is very vocally tra. Very vocal, and there is a lot of that in my professional circle. I also personally just don't like them. I don't think they have comported themselves correctly in relation to this. I will say, I think there is a lot more scepticism than people realise, because I know, like, I've had a couple of instances where I've had friends, like, a couple of years ago, it was really subtle. I've had, like, it was two separate instances within the same couple of months of one friend who I'd almost had an argument about, because I'd actually said, it was not long after, you know, J.K. Rowling's essay, the essay she wrote. And this friend, I knew that she watched a lot of YouTube. She liked Jamie Dodger, who Dr. Jamie something is a trans-identified female who is, I think, is a PhD in psychology. I'm going to try and avoid pronouns, because I don't really... It's even now I don't feel comfortable calling somebody especially sort of like somebody who's clearly so in, because I don't mind Dr. Jamie Jammy Dodger, comes across as a fairly likable, intelligent person, though she speaks a lot of wank,
as is her right to do,
as her right. She's a medicalized female, I'm gonna just use she. This friend sort of like watched that, and we had an almost sort of like falling out. And I remember once I kind of raised a skeptical voice while I was visiting her in her living room, and she just sort of like put on Jammy Dodger, this Dr. Jamie, as a way of sort of like, you know, watch this, and you know, and you're like, okay,
you'll be educated.
I, you know, I was sort of like, oh, right, yes, okay.
Oh, she put it on to say to you, look.
I watched some more after the fact, because there was a long period where I was actually trying to convince myself.
Of course, really hard.
There's nothing I have tried to believe so hard as this. But then a couple of years later, like, I think we realised we weren't going to have a conversation about this, so we avoided it just for the sake of our friendship.
I've got some friends like that.
And then a few years later, she mentioned this other YouTuber she liked, and she said, yeah, her husband's just come out as trans. And she said, I really think that once a guy's past a certain age, he should just accept it's not going to work for him.
And she said this. Your friend is interesting.
And, you know, sort of like, because she said sort of like, he looks exactly like what he is. He's a 40-year-old guy.
It's not
in a bad, bad wig, and he's got that thing where he's put lipstick on, but it actually makes his lips look thinner. The fact that he's male is so clearly stamped. Anyway, that was one incident.
And so, then, hang on, did she recognise that as a transphobic thing to say?
I didn't want to touch it. I kind of wanted to talk about other things that day, and you know when you're like, I don't know if this is
a test.
There's another thing about this. Her and I was in a group chat with her and another friend of mine, and when in that group chat, I kind of said, "You don't think like I actually agree with some of what JKR said." They kept sending me pink news articles.
Oh my god! To read,
and you know when you're like,
no, try harder.
Again, I wasn't going to like scupper friendships, you know, decade long friendship.
Yeah.
But it was, and so I've kind of left it. And to be honest, we're all busy. We've got kids and things.
So what was the second one? Sorry.
The second one was a friend I worked with who was a gay male, and he was part of the gay male, not gay male, but the LGBT like representative group for our workplace. And we went out for some drinks just to kind of bitch about, you know, things. I think one of us was, I think I was sort of like getting ready to leave where we were working. So, and he was one of my closest friends at work, and he kind of said, we'd had a conversation shortly before this where I'd mentioned that I had an acquaintance, former friend, who was a trans-identified female who had had 3 children. And I kind of basically expressed that I really don't think that this person was in a good place, and that I don't think that the circumstances that led to her transitioning were at all healthy, and I don't think it was an empowering move. That's something I really would like to talk about, how disempowering this movement is.
Yes.
Especially for people who are adherents of it.
Mm.
But I kind of mentioned that, and he was sort of like going, oh, you know, that's really odd. I think we were using very, you know, correct language during that conversation. Like we were saying he and I thing. Anyway, fast forward, go back to this, where after the fact we were having a drink in a pub, and he kind of just said out of the blue, you're a TERF, aren't you? I was just like, ah, and I was sort of like, I kind of froze.
In the spotlight.
And I was sort of like, no. And I said, well, you know, it's complicated.
I don't disagree
that people, you know, are, you know, they're in a role and they're being that kind of thing. And he goes, oh, he was so lighthearted.
Okay.
And he kind of was just sort of like, I knew you were a TERF. Yeah. And then I remember he kind of walked around the table, sat next to me and said, okay, I don't understand this stuff. To me. Brilliant. And you know, when you're like, okay, I wonder how many people are like that.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people. And talking about like,
Everyone's like that, I think.
I think there's a lot of it, and I think because, like I say, the speed with which the mob can descend on you shuts people up.
Terrifying.
Especially
if,
I think there's something I've written down here, the 1-2 punch of what I call toxic progressive movements, like trans or...
Hang on, before we get to that, I just want to finish that, like, that thing. Have you read The Handmaid's Tale? You know when, like, the women, and they have to... They do that secret code, like, what is it? It's a beautiful May day. And if the person's like, yes, it is a beautiful May day, you're like, oh my God, she's one of us.
Yeah.
Like, you often feel like that. But I was saying to you the other day, Claire, like, I don't think the question is, why do you believe this stuff?
Yes.
I think the question is, why do you pretend to believe this stuff?
That's really
a more pertinent
question
for me, because
I think it's such a correct way of questioning.
Because I don't think anyone believes it. Well, and the louder you shout, the fucking less you believe it.
Yes,
and you're
surely,
trying to convince
surely.
Me, and trying to convince
you
yourself.
Through.
Like, what is your... And especially someone like your mate, what's he called?
Aidan Cumberbatch.
Yeah. The way he's just so like, yeah, they are. Like you,
he's desperate, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he's
absolutely
so
desperate.
And it's quite frightening. And you think, well, it's like you were saying about this ideology. You know, if you're quite secure in your beliefs and they're on a very firm foundation, You go, yeah, slag my god off, or call me a man, exactly, or misgender exactly. me. I don't yeah, fuck because I know it's not true.
Yeah.
But if you're on really shaky ground and you don't quite believe it yourself, you're yeah. like a little puppy on the lino floor, skittering around, and the littlest thing is gonna. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the
more fervent.
And also, especially sort of like if you've got real incentive to believe it.
So that's
one of the things that also coming from higher education. The thing is about higher education. The thing about academics is that they are. First of all, academia is difficult. It's one of the most viciously competitive. I know that's a difficult. There's lots of viciously competitive sectors, but academia is really, really hard.
And are you competing for like status, or is it money, or career progression?
Roles, actual jobs.
Actual jobs.
Status.
Status is a big one. Actual jobs. Getting your because it's a very reputation. Reputation led sector. It's very much who you know. Somebody's put in a good word for you.
It's very like the arts, actually.
Similar. Hugely. Same with heritage.
Because
I've worked in heritage as well quite a lot. It's getting your face known, getting your name known, and getting people saying, oh, yeah. But there's also a lot of backbiting, a lot of backstabbing. There's also a lot of that.
Mm.
And one of the things, I've seen guy, who is he? Edge of the Matrix guy with the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think he was talking about this, that he used to be a member of the firefighters.
Oh, that's right. Chris guy. Steve
and the sandwich board.
Yeah, Steve and
is
the sandwich.
Is he called Steve?
I thought he was called Steve.
I thought it was called Chris.
But he's Chris's billboard Chris, isn't he?
He's the Canadian one.
Sidewalk Steve.
Sandwich board Steve.
Billboard Chris.
English billboard. Oh, I don't like billboard Chris. I think he's a wanker. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, he's very conservative.
And if you're listening, you can fuck off with your... I like dancing like a girl.
Sidewalk Steve.
Sidewalk Steve.
Let the poor cheerleader guy dance.
He's amazing.
He was brilliant.
You fucking dance.
I don't even like sports. And I was just like, yes!
Yeah, go on.
But he kind of made this comment that when he... Which I was sort of like, somebody else has noticed this as well. Which was, if you wanted to get your name known, if you wanted to get your face known, and like I say, these kind of sectors are, sectors work like this, employment work like this, it would really help. One way you could do that is saying, oh yes, I'm speaking for this particular...
Marginalised
group or special interest.
Then you've got a special status that your boss won't have.
Or rather, it could be even more subtle than that. It means that you sound informed about a recent thing. It was really quite transparent to me that some of the most clearly careerist people, the sort of people who would say one thing one day, and then their manager would come in and say the opposite thing, and then literally, like, seconds after, they'd be changing what they'd said.
Right, yeah.
They were often the ones who were the most performatively using the correct pronouns.
Most virtue signalling.
She, her.
It was one individual in particular, when I was doing my PhD, really... straight white woman, not that the white has anything to do, but she was a straight woman, not trans identified whatsoever. Really made an effort to say all the right things.
Oh my god, it's so
exhausting. She was in charge of the social media account for something to do with the university, and it was genuinely quite cringeworthy how much like pro LGBT stuff she put out.
Yeah. You can imagine even the gays going,
"I'm such a good
girl."
She was really vocal. And one of the things about that is that it gave her something to say in meetings.
Yes.
People learn. Another individual was known. He was known to be. He himself was one of the LGBTs, but he was not the T. He was the L,
wasn't he?
In more ways than one, though. No, he was. I can't remember if he was a G or a B, because I think he was a G. But he was, like, even before this kicked off, he was known to be the sort of person who would put in a vexatious complaint. Yeah. Because yeah, like, who yeah, sort of like facts. Would have an argument with somebody, or he'd be passed over for a promotion, and then he'd say sort of like, well, that person was homophobic to me once.
Oh.
Yes.
And then he'd spread absolutely, like, he was a real known career stirrer.
Yeah.
He became one of the most vocal, one of the most on his social media and on his official, you know, Twitter and all the rest of it. He would post it very, very openly.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite clear that these, I don't believe these people are true believers. No. I think there are true believers in academia and in heritage.
Well, academia, I mean, this is obviously the point of like what we're saying, but it has got so much to answer for, because in my industry, it's mostly, I don't know, we have a lot of training on
the lanyard class,
but we're all obviously all working class, and the vast majority of us are, you know, on the coal face, just getting on with our work, not asked. When they tried to put pronouns in our badges, we were all like, yeah, fuck off. But you see how it's driven by the lanyard lots, who will never do a day's work on the coal face where we are. Mm. They're all in offices, and they're all university educated, and they've all got like degrees in HR and really important, crucial stuff like that, and paid so much fucking money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wear nice blouses to work and things, and we're all in like fucking down the mines.
Well, it's the Sunday Peggy thing, isn't it?
It's exactly that.
It's the, like, the, what's, what was her name, that dreadful woman?
Isla Bumba.
Isla Bumba and Kate Watson. You know what I mean?
And yeah, like, Kate Watson's. But seeing how it's, again, it comes down to that class divide, doesn't it?
Like, it does.
So it all ferments in academia, and then they disseminate it, just sparks across the workplace.
Filters. Filters through. That's a more polite way of putting it. Filters.
Husband introduced me to a new term, which was it's broken containment.
It has, it broke
containment, and it's like
a virus that's got out of the lab.
Like, I just like I do wonder,
so
sort
good.
Of like,
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, virus out the lab.
Broken containment.
Really is. It really
I'm
is.
Remember that.
It was meant to just be there as like a little kind of mad experiment.
It was. It's a mad thought experiment, and because here's the thing, like I like academia because I'm a generally curious person. There is like a high incidence of autism in academia, which is not a surprise because these are people who are hyper-focusing on something.
On things.
And
yeah.
that's
yeah.
what
things.
Autistic
yeah.
people do.
Yeah.
And so it's not a surprise that autistic people go, actually, that looks fun to me, and that's what they choose to do. I myself, I'm ASD 1.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it is meant to, these are interesting, the sort of like the intellectual basis that that, you know, some people seem to think that trans has, and that's what they use, and that's what they argue, and that makes them think that they have the authority to use terms like biological essentialism and discourse, and I remember
ontological
one,
and epistemological.
A woman is a dialectical framework, and this kind of thing. I remember I was going back through my Twitter, and I remember dialectical framework guy who blocked me after I wrote a tweet and a Twitter thread in response saying you're a twat. Basically,
dialectical framework guy.
Yeah, no, but it does have, like, it's interesting in a seminar room.
Yes.
It's really interesting.
Yes. I was talking about this with my friend here the other day. We were, you know, it's just this thing, isn't it? That it's the sort of thing that when you're a student
and you're smoking too much weed.
And it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're like, is that actually a table, though? Is that table actually there?
What if we're all just, like, dirt under John's fingernail,
man? What if there's somebody pulling us? Or what if, did the tree really fall?
When you see red, is it the same red that I see?
Really? And then you wake up in the morning, you're like, okay, well, now you actually get on with real life.
Yeah.
Gotta stop smoking weed, man.
Whether or not, regardless of whether or not that's a table or not, it's doing a fantastic job of holding our concert.
Whatever you
exactly.
are. Well done.
Good job.
It's really helpful. Because back down here in
reality. I remember when I first was trying to understand it, because obviously I'm coming from academia, I had faith in academia and I had faith in intellectual arguments, and then I read Derrida. I understand, like, do you want me to go through the functionalism, structuralism, post-structuralism?
I might be,
we are 40 minutes, could we just cut to the Butler Foucault, like where this came from and what
I'll just give you a really quick one. So post-structuralism comes from structuralism, Structuralism is a way of understanding human society that that says, okay, it's not just quite a clinical way of understanding, oh, we need to have a festival to have a good time and so that we like each other. It says we understand the world as part of wider structures, hence the name.
Yes, okay, yes.
And that
yes.
there is in-group and out-group. Post-structuralism started in the 1960s, and it's typically a guy called Jacques Derrida, who I hate, because he just spoke wank.
You just alienated half of our listeners now. Oh, I'm sorry. Big Derrida guys.
I don't care. If there's a hill, I'm going to die on. It's also...
He, deriding Derrida.
He, Butler, sometimes Foucault... when you actually do understand what they're saying, it's either, well, yeah, that's a very basic, clearly obvious truth. I don't understand why you've just had to spend 5 pages.
Yes. And lots of word salad.
It's just simply, no, that isn't true because you're... Like, anyway, the post-structuralism basically said that these structures that society creates, structuralism said that these are universal, around the globe, no matter where you go, you will find the same general frameworks of, you know, pollution and cleanliness, life, death, male, female.
Yeah.
Post-structuralism says, no, it's actually decided by the society at the time. Okay. And that's why you get to the point of saying, that's not a table, that is a column.
Yeah, because we're just making it up.
We're making it up, and we're making it up through language.
Yeah.
And there are ways of thinking about that is, in a way, true. That, for example, the economy, money.
Belief systems. Belief. It's a belief.
It's a belief system. Nations, where we draw the line and say this is France and this
like
is Germany.
It's almost a bit arbitrary, potentially.
It's arbitrary. And, you know, Derrida did a big thing called deconstruction, where when you hear people say sort of like, you know, if a woman is somebody with a uterus, well, that means that I don't have a uterus because I've got, you know, had a hysterectomy. That is sort of linked to that.
But these big conceptual ideas, they're ultimately kept and preserved and continued because they are in the service of societies.
Yeah.
So when someone like Butler... Well, I don't know, I'm just pulling this out.
Okay, go on.
But what I'm saying is, like, if it works, it's going to continue because it's obviously working for the majority or the most powerful people.
Yeah.
So they carry forward. But then you get someone like Foucault who comes along and is like, yeah, but I want to shag kids. So how can I take these highfalutin ideas and service them? So I'm like, what is age anyway? Mm. What is consent? Nothing is real. So I can shag kids.
Or power. Foucault was a big thing about power, of who really has the power in this scenario.
What is reality anyway? So it's like, they're all, you know, I'm sure Derrida had his reasons, but then you inject, like,
people's actual personal dysfunction into these ideas.
Or Judith Butler, whatever the fuck she's
at. Yeah, I was just about to say, what is going on with Judith Butler? What on earth is wrong with her?
Does she believe what she says? Does she get paid by the word? Yeah. I don't think that.
Is she
Charles Dickens? Every word is like a thrapne.
Is she not well? What's her background?
Is she right?
When you actually...
No, she's definitely not that,
yeah. No. Yeah, when you listen to her, it's like the Derrida thing. To be fair, like, in his defence, when you do... Like, I have read some Derrida stuff fairly recently that I actually said, okay, fair enough, Jacques, maybe I gave you a hard word of it. But look, when you actually do listen to her, it really is that thing of, like, she is never going to walk back on this because she has built her career. She's in her 70s
now.
Gender trouble was written in 1990. And so her argument is that gender is like the economy, like nations. It is created through conversation and discourse is what the thing, how people behave. That's hence the dialectical framework nonsense.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you actually listen to her talk, she's compelled to speak in straight English. it's some of the most underwhelming. It's really not very interesting.
It's not even very... Yeah, okay.
Is it one of those things where people pretend to go,
that's fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is like, there's something that I've been thinking about, which is stuff, bad ideas like trans, that we've seen a few examples of it in recent times, it really comes with a 1-2 punch. It comes with sort of, first of all, real moral urgency. You know, there's a genocide happening here. Or there's
trans kids.
And the other thing, so you've got this punch. So and also, what you're doing, you're waiting. You know, you don't want to be part on the bad side, wrong side of history.
Yeah,
do you?
I hate that
phrase. The other thing it has is that it says, and we've got this intellectual authority from these.
So
the Endocrine Society agree with us. Shocking that. The Endocrine Society, the people who make money on hormones.
The surgeons.
And then, well, your average person is just kind of like...
Who has the time to go if Judith Butler
is the balloon, someone like Kelly J. Keane is the needle who just comes along and goes, what a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
Men do not have fannies and women do not have willies. And it just cuts right through.
Yeah.
She's the fucking Cillit Bang on the grease.
She's so
ideology.
And this is why it's so good.
I mean, love her or hate her, it's so appealing when you're like, when you read that wall of text. I mean, even on our side, we've got certain people on our side that, you know, anything under 300 words, don't get out of bed for less than a 12-paragraph tweet. And a lot of normal working class non-academics find that so off-putting. I can't make head nor tail of it. And then someone like that comes along, and you can call it mindless sloganeering, or you can call it whatever you want to, you know, slagger
off. I'm not a vet, but I know what a dog is.
Wonderful phrase. Amazing. Off the cuff. And this is why, I mean, a lot of people slag her off. I have slagged off in the past.
She's definitely not perfect, is she? Do you know what I mean? But you know, she does some great stuff.
If you've got people like that that are appealing to the head, she's got the heart, you know. She's been an amazing
force. I used to not like Kelly J. Keen, but I've got to say, probably ever since I became a mother, I've become sort of like appreciative of the. I do not have any
time
for
this fucking nonsense.
No, yeah, I love talking about good antidotes to Butler. Like, I know I've been fangirling over a lot, but Kathleen Stock is a wonderful.
Well,
antidote.
Material Girls. I agree with you a lot. Like, when I read that, I just thought she's not pulling emotion here. It's all very kind of like. But if you look at it like this and look at it like that,
it's
and
sensible.
You look at it like this, it's sensible.
Yeah, she's very sensible.
And she was never like sort of extreme in any way either. Do you know what I mean? Even though she just got accused of it.
I think
you need that sort of just
so we are coming up to like 10 minutes to go now. We try and keep it an hour, don't we? For the sake of our lovely editor. Sorry, Stace. But what is going to happen in the next 20 years in academia?
Academia is in trouble, if you ask me. It's like, it's not just from this. But a lot of people have gone to university and are still struggling to get a job. It used to be that if you got an undergraduate degree, it would be like a stamp of basic competence.
Yes.
We've all met people who went to university who are not competent.
Absolutely.
Universities are condensing, put simply.
Condensing, what do you mean, sorry?
Shrinking,
okay.
Departments are getting shut, especially humanities. It's not just the humanities that are shrinking. I've got an acquaintance who works in like a science lab in an airport, testing stuff coming in, and she's told me that they've had a massive increase in PhDs applying, like science PhDs, because there's just... When you do get a contract, it's typically very short-term, 1 year, maybe 3 years. And so universities aren't what they were. They don't have... My generation was the first generation where... Or one of the first where it was just like, everybody goes to university.
Yes. Yeah.
Now you're seeing a massive drop in that. Employers are saying, actually, it doesn't really matter.
It's just that it's watered down the value,
isn't
it?
It is enormously.
Really?
And this... Stuff like this... Toxic progressivism is the sort of like the term I've started calling it to myself to describe
all of
this.
It's a good word.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That has really tarnished the academy's reputation, because of course it has.
Yeah.
Because if you come out of university and what...
Talk shit.
Talk shit. And one of the prevailing things is that you now no longer know what a woman is. You're meant to go into university.
Come out more knowledgeable, not less.
Rather than going, yes, but what is knowledge? And I understand, I do appreciate Like, I do like the fact that as somebody who's got a PhD, spent two blinking long in university, I do like the fact that I've got research skills. I do like the fact that I've got, you know, a little bit of authority. People see the doctor and they're like, oh, lovely. And I'm actually, you do not know how many thick bastards have doctorates.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
But what I do envision happening is that there's going to be more private universities. A lot of people are going to get education through elsewhere, which isn't great, to be honest with you, because...
How are they going to get private university? What do you mean?
There's been a few, like, private... Prague U is one. It's a right-leaning American...
Okay. Or a bit like Dr. Jane Claire Jones does, the feminist.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can actually sort... So the way university normally works is that you start... For an undergraduate, average undergraduate, you can take a module which is 101 French literature or...
Philosophy.
Or 101 material culture, which is archaeology.
Yeah,
What you can now do a lot of the time is that, and this is actually happening, universities are actually putting more money and more funding into their, what they call continuing education or widening participation. More people are not signing up to an intensive 3-year degree. They're going in for...
certain topic that they're really interested in.
Is also happening is that things like informal education, like the University of YouTube, as I've heard it called. And there are some brilliant YouTube channels that talk very in-depth about, you know, art history or ancient religion.
Yeah.
Some of it's brilliant. The problem with that, and the reason why I think it's not actually... It sounds great, but there is a really serious downside. The thing about the university is that there's meant to be an element of quality control.
Yes, and you haven't got that when you were
And there's also this YouTube thing of, I'm thinking about this, and I don't know how to English it good, but we'll give it a pun. When you go to university, there's a sort of agreed culture or points of reference.
Structuralism.
There's an agreed sort of, I don't know how to put it, that we'd all understand that, I don't know, Paradise Lost is an important poem in English literature.
Yeah.
Or we'll all agree that, I don't know, this is good art or this is good, this is sound philosophy. If you're paying privately for PragerU, you might have some university, have some professors there that are like, well, you know, the theory of evolution's just a theory. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to have this agreed and then...
Agreed truths.
You might have more subjective truths.
Okay, yeah.
Lived experiences. And, I mean, there were some universities in Canada a couple of years ago at the height of the fucking craziness where they were rejecting received truths from the Enlightenment about maths.
Oh my good God.
And
these are public universities.
Proper universities. I mean, someone write in and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I distinctly remember, you know, we have to respect indigenous ways of knowing.
Yes, I remember that.
This happened, didn't it? I didn't just have a fucking fever dream. And they were sort of accepting that you can't... the Enlightenment was great, man, but what about indigenous ways of learning and knowing?
Yeah.
Ways of knowing, like, well, is it true or isn't it true? Fucking make
yeah,
up.
Yeah.
So if you're deferring to these ideological, and then you're setting up your own, your own
potentially ideologically,
you're only going to employ professors that lecturers that support you, and then this is the. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So to have this sort of agreed truths is important for it's a station against the diffusion.
Well, it's stability, isn't it? It's sort
stability,
of societal
societal
stability.
Societal,
that's
fucking easy for you to say.
Yeah, really easy.
Societal stability.
Stability.
In
certain things that we know and they're true and objective.
Yeah.
And I think this is where this is so destabilising and so divisive. You know, and obviously it's not just in gender, it's come out in other things as well, but obviously gender's the most glaring of the basic ground that you're walking on is questioned.
Yeah,
but nothing's true, is it? Because, like, you know, everyone's arguing now, like, well, is there a genocide? Well, it's not. Look at it. It's not a genocide. Well, it is genocide. Well, look at men. They're not women. They're men. There are women. Was it an incendiary tweet? Should she be? Like, everything is so in flux at the minute.
Yeah.
This is why I'm convinced this is all a fucking psyop by the Russians, Chinese.
Yeah.
Russians and Chinese.
Endocrinologists.
Endocrinologists, Russian, Chinese endocrinologists.
I mean, you could go down so many different, like, paths of, like, what the actual fuck is going on.
Yeah, what the actual fuck is going on.
I think also there's an element as well, especially, like, coming from academia. Heritage is a different kettle of fish entirely because that's out of thinking, so they have to be lovey-dovey and fluffy and doing whatever the mainstream thing is. But in academia, some of the things you were saying there really made me think of sort of like how it's part of it. So agreed truths, yeah, there are some sort of like things we have to accept,
like, no, because university male and female.
But university, yeah. It's meant to be like the clues in the word, in the name, it's meant to be everything. You're meant to be able to come in and argue and test ideas everything. It's yeah. Sort of like this sort of like it's meant to see it to be, you know, a thing. Except some people are extremely competitive and they want their ideas to be the best. And so what could be a more like attention grabbing
than men can be women.
Provocative thing that people talk about gender is deconstruction. You've got a vagina, well, I've got a vagina, I had it made last week.
But let must be just kind of rubbing her hands together somewhere, just thinking, oh my god, she's got everybody talking about this. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? She's got everybody fighting against each other. She doesn't give a shit about what's like, the damage it's actually done to people.
It's Judith Butler got a cleaning woman that just goes, this all out of shit though, innit? Do you know what I mean? Has she got like a crazy old uncle that she sees at Christmas, just like, you don't have chaps, I'm shit.
Well, here's the thing that I find so frustrating about post-structuralists like Judith Butler. Judith Butler is a lesbian. I bet, like, after having sex with her partner or after whatever, she's not gone sort of like, oh shit, like, did the condom break?
I'm not pregnant.
Exactly. She's not going to shag a woman with a penis, is she?
No.
So it doesn't affect her life.
Like, the reality does have consistent laws that we can all observe. And do you know why I know that people like Judith Butler know this? I bet you she puts petrol in her car.
Exactly.
I bet you she switches, goes something like that on the wall as a light switch, and she expects, and if it doesn't go and she goes, it must be the bulb. These are because the world has consistent laws.
The sun's risen again today.
Yeah.
What the fucking odds are that? Every fucking
didn't
day
didn't even have to ask it to. But it's like, I also think, sort of like, I remember that sort of like alternative ways of knowing.
Yeah.
Fucking bonkers. Like, there is like an element of overcorrection of sort of like a lot of universities and a lot of like, you know, Western nations have gone sort of like, okay, mea culpa, colonization was a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, and we
but we don't throw the
it.
Enlightenment out with the colonialism.
Yeah. And also,
as we always say.
Yeah. I've got to say also that stuff like gender is recolonization.
Oh, totally.
This is something that really pisses me off. I know that we have to keep it like short, but I'll just say this. As a historian, and as somebody who studies other cultures, ones that I grew up in, I thought it was a clear understanding that we do not bring our ideas with us when we look at that. So, for example, you can't talk about mental health in ancient Roman times or ancient Mesopotamian times in the same way we talk about mental health now. Why? Because they did not understand emotions and what's going on in your head as a health thing.
So you're just projecting ideas
can't. Saying that, oh yes, there are new ways of knowing, they had more than one gender in this thing. It's just like, no, they had a belief system. Okay, so I'm going to be the fact that I'm actually more structuralist in my views. The ancient Egyptians did not have a third gender god. They had a god of the fertility who they were very, very grateful for. And they sometimes, because this is how they often used artwork, they would depict this god with both either a penis and with breasts, because this was a fertility god.
Yeah.
The Greeks did not believe that some, you know, boys could be sort of like half male, half female. Yeah.
It was a metaphor of fertility.
It was well, with the Greeks, no, it was a metaphor of them being creepy pervs towards underage boys.
What?
Also, because there's another element to it. Which is in places like ancient Greece, and you see this in with what we call Thai ladyboys, or kathoi is what they're actually called. If a man wants to have sex outside of his partnership but he doesn't want to risk pregnancy, there's only one type of person he can absolutely have sex with, no matter how many times, and be absolutely certain
confident
no pregnancy is ever going to occur, and it's a male. That's why. Yeah. Tyler again, it's
like, how much of this is led by the male libido? Like, yeah. I want to shag what I want, when I want, and I don't want to be called... Well, do you know what? I believe now, they're now offering a vaccine to... We're not allowed to call them gay men. We've got to call them GBMSM.
What?
So it's gay, bisexual, or men who have sex with men. So you can't just call them... Gaiman, Neil Gaiman's, you've got to call them GBMSMs. Because some men who have sex with men would be appalled
to be called if you gay. Called them
gay. I'm not gay, I just love shagging men.
I just have sex with men occasionally.
Yeah, only once in a while. Fucking hell. Wow. Yeah. This is dictated down to us, down the mines.
I know.
From the lanyard glass. It's like, we can't...
this is what you've got to start saying now.
You can't say B-A-M-E anymore. You know, you used to have to say that. Say this. Now they call them global majority.
The global majority or the global people from the global south people as well. From the
But people of a global majority. But... That means that
we're the minority.
We're the minority, but then we've been told for years that minorities, we're the majority. If you're a minority, then you're marginalised. So again, we're not thinking all the way through. But the thing that really chaps my arse,
the lanyard is the fact that not thinking someone all the way through.
Fucking the lanyard boss, who's got 70,000 lanyards around her neck. He's got one of those really long, elongated.
And just pointing at everybody. This was
change bit, that word to over there. Now and then tomorrow change it back on a high decree. But she'll be on more money than all of the doctors and the nurses. And
none of this
together.
Shit affects her life.
And it doesn't matter. And no one cares. And 14 people will go, oh yeah, we're going to be called at the global majority now.
Genius.
Oh my God, did you just say BAME? Fucking off to the gallows with you. Yeah.
Sorry, you're fired.
That's a 2021
My cleaner said BAME.
I fired her. Oh my God.
As somebody who's married to somebody of the global majority.
Oh wait, what's the acronym? GM. A pogrom.
I can tell you now. The reason why I hate that so much is, first of all, do you know how would you feel if you started getting lumped in with a group of other people who you have nothing to do with? Yeah.
No from continents
well,
away.
Well, this is the whole thing about the LGBT, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, you're kind of going, I'm sorry, I'm into women. This is nothing to do with me. Yeah. About what people feel about their bodies.
You know when they call it the euphemism treadmill?
Yeah.
Where I can see absolutely that we're going to get round to non-white, aren't we? Like, that's what they mean.
Well, it's like non... We've got to the point non-men, which is despicable.
So you can see how, like the word coloured was that was the polite way.
Yeah.
And then it got back round to people of colour.
It got... Kind of, coloured got, like, well, associated then it was black. With South Africa things.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're not allowed... It gets... Yeah.
Well, I know South Africans that call themselves... Like, I used to work with loads of South Africans, and this guy was like, oh, yeah, I'm coloured. And my bum hole snapped shut. I was like,
you can't say that.
And he was like, yeah, I think I can call myself what I like.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a really good point. I don't know what to do. My liberal brain just sort of went,
My husband's, not his grandmother, but like his step-grandmother, grew up in South Africa. She's of Asian descent. South Asian descent, and I remember being at a meal and she started talking about the like seeing some coloured people, and I remember sort of like I looked around, I kind of did a double take, and then I saw my husband's cousin and go and then sort of like she kind of just says sort of like, and you know what, I do understand it, but the woman is in her
80s. You're not going to try and correct someone's speech, especially if she's from that place, and you're going to go, actually.
And it's also the problem with a lot of this is it's kind of like, you know, it's all about the intent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's like...
To be fair, I do think that my step-grandmother, my husband's step-grandmother might be a bit racist.
Okay.
Everyone's nan is a bit racist.
Yes. Yeah. But a lot of the time, sometimes these words are sort of used in a sort of... You know, that's just the language that we're using. They're not actually necessarily meaning anything harmful by it. Yeah. It's just the language.
But there are some, there are three people recording a podcast right now that are talking about, well, when people say transgender, you know, you've got to forgive them. They don't understand that we don't use that term anymore. That we just say trans now, because transgender... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Like, we are the nans in the trans... We are the trans nans. We're such a nan. Do you know what I mean?
And here's the thing. I do... Sometimes I think sort of like, okay, I understand. Especially when you're writing an article or like a paper, there is a push towards being as precise as possible. So that whole thing about gay men is like, or you know, are you a gay man, or are you a bi man, or are you a man who sleeps with a man? Basically, they realise that. Like, for example, you might be a man who has had sex with a man, but you wouldn't do it again.
You fell over. Yeah.
You tried it.
It
was
a thing. You dabbled.
Yeah. And so they don't want to say gay men because they're like, oh, well, he doesn't count as one, but we need to talk to him because he had sex with a man, and we need to talk to men who have sex with men because...
He got drunk one night. Yeah. They'll still say fucking people with a cervix, though. So for the men, they're being very precise and covering all the bases. But when it comes to smear tests, it's like, are you a person of feminine experience?
What if I say no, absolutely not?
Are you a non-man? Are you now, or have you ever been? Oh, there was a good one on Twitter the other day that I retweeted. It was like, a woman is a person who identifies with the homunculus ferongus.
That is post-structuralist nonsense. That is the discourse.
And this is why we need a Kelly J. Keane to come along and go,
absolutely,
fuck off with your bollocks.
Well, ironically, we're going to have to shut up soon, aren't we?
Sorry, very quickly,
an interesting thing going back to this kind of structuralism language, blah, 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 is that the academics and the middle class use language. They use language to alienate the working class.
Yeah,
they absolutely do.
Yeah,
and I, you know, you're kind of like, it's almost a deliberate thing because it separates them from the working class because they can use all this fancy art, fucking up your own backside language.
Yeah,
that, you know, people are just fucking busy getting on with their fucking lives.
And then they feel
me.
Superior. It's like, yeah. Oh, don't
it's
you
a massive superiority trip.
To what end? It's like, and we these, justify your big salary.
And these are the ones that call themselves fucking socialists. It's like, you don't give a...
Yeah.
Shit about the working
class. Class war.
I feel like we need to mention Rob Anderson's luxury ideas.
Yeah, luxury beliefs.
That is absolutely, absolutely true.
It really is,
No, because... It really is. Yeah. And I've been in that position where you're writing... I understand sort of, like, we all have to code switch between our language. So I might say sort of, like, oh, you probably pissed me off that. When I'm had this really awful experience, this guy really pissed me off. And when I'm maybe filing a police report about what happened, if it escalates, I might say sort of, like, I found his manner... Like, you have to change your language a little bit.
It used to be called differentiation.
Yeah.
And it's just basically you differentiate from the different person that you're with and where you are. Yeah.
But then especially because, I think, because academia is so competitive and because it is so reputation-led, people absolutely, desperately are trying to carve out. Also, because if you go into academia, you're meant to be clever. Yeah. You're meant to be... and so it's that thing about how, you know, how I saw this TED talk ages ago where it was a supermodel, and of course she's a supermodel, she's beautiful. And she said at the end of the TED talk, and she was talking about why you can't believe what goes on in magazines. And she says, I'm so insecure about the way I look because every day I have to think about how I look. If I've put on 5 pounds, will it show up? People will point out if I am looking rough or looking tired, and I am getting compared to every other most beautiful woman on earth. And so her self-esteem is in pieces every day.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think that's how academics are with their, how intelligent they are.
Interesting.
Okay. And so you're sort of constantly scrutinising your actual intellect.
Have you read this? And this? Yeah, people lie all the time in academia.
Have you been published lately? Where have you been published?
Yeah, how many books did you read?
Have you read this article? Oh, I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I did understand it.
Yeah, or, you know, if you said, I don't understand that, that didn't make sense. The amount of pettiness... I remember being at a conference, and we'd had like a keynote, and I thought it was, you know, fairly interesting keynote. Used about artwork in a particular monuments, ancient monuments. And I remember sat opposite, and this is not the only occasion. You hear it all the time where somebody goes, "Oh, that was an incredibly like pedestrian observation," you know, like it was an hour of saying, or like somebody else saying. that, and I often I would have. It does make you feel kind of bad because I remember like on a completely separate occasion having listened to a presentation and thought that was a really interesting presentation. Like had changed. It really did make me change my mind a little bit about how I thought about this, like this concept when we're going back. And somebody was going, "Oh, that was an awful talk. It was so boring." Yeah. And like it was cited this, and it, you know, it's so backbiting. Yeah. And I promise you, that's partly why there's so many academics really
falling over
for
them
this.
Fucking sales, really, to that, buy into gender, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not much hope for university. That's sad.
I think there might be a renaissance. My husband says, I don't know, though.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
What would we do without all the universities?
Oh, no.
I'll be sad.
How will we survive? But you do need, I mean, we do need the thinkers and the, you know.
Of course we do.
But maybe not, it's just, as it Tony Blair, when
we just
I
need
was,
to pull them out of their own backside.
We need to get an adjacent.
Do you know what I mean? They need to go swimming for a bit.
Did Tony Blair say that he wanted everyone to go to university?
I think
one
it probably
policies?
Was Tony Blair's,
like,
yeah.
Why?
I
Tony
like
Blair?
Universities just because, like I say, like, I'm driven by curiosity. I am the sort of person who goes, you know, what seasoning did the ancient Egyptians have for their food? Did they enjoy their food?
Crucial,
the
big question.
Did they have it? And you do find out really interesting stuff. Like, for example, our teeth are far worse than they were like 700 years ago.
Oh, I've heard this before. Because we have so much shine.
But the ancient Egyptians weren't. They had awful teeth.
Yeah.
So they had really bad dental problems. And I think it's so worthwhile having knowledge about the ancient
lots of stuff is really fascinating.
And also,
isn't
like,
it?
There's something so meaningful about talking about heritage work, about finding, you know, a part and you notice like a little artistic detail. Like, it's such a human thing. This is why it's the humanities.
Yeah.
And, like, we're not going to forget that this person was alive and sort of like decided to add a little bit of purple to this picture of a snake on a pot, or, you know, that, you know, somebody's made a little figurine of a horse and put wheels on it so a kid can pull it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, 3000 BC. That's
it's crucial stuff. Yeah, but I think we just need to
take
put
a step
Kelly
back.
J. Keane as education secretary.
Yes.
That's what we need. Okay, so let's leave it there because I've got things to do. Okay, so it was so nice chatting to you.
It was brilliant.
I feel like we could have chatted forever. Let's do a part two. And so we'll see you next time on Let Women Peek podcast. Good night and God bless.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that. That was another episode. Another banger.
Another fucking belter.
Let Women Peek.
So we hope you enjoyed that. Listen in next time where something will happen.
Definitely something will happen.
And with someone.
Yes.
We don't know who. It could be you.
We don't know
who. It could
be you.
Yeah. Do you want to come on our podcast? Tell us about your turfling story. If you do, get in touch.
Let Women Peek
one@gmail.com. Do you know what? If you want to find us, you'll
find
us.
On Twitter,
we're not going to fucking beg you. Do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But we are sort of begging you. Are we begging?
Nah. We've got loads lined up. We've got loads lined up.
Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm not going to
fuck you. No, we're not going to beg, no.
But do come on.
Yeah.
I'm begging. Okay. And yes, we love you. And we hope to see you next time.
Happy turfing.
Happy turfing. And we will see you next time on Let Women Peek. Yay!
Bye! Bye.